Hello, everyone. So we're just gonna go ahead and just jump right in and get to the episode. I had a conversation with a friend of mine, Ben Reed. This is a rather dream-centric episode. We talk about lucid dreaming, circadian rhythm, and sleep patterns, and go off into tangents about social media and how technology has changed, and is definitely changing now the way we function and how we approach our rest. We ask the question of why is it so important to always be connected or be in an alert mindset? So there's plenty of good conversation in here and good tangents in here, so I hope you enjoy.
I'll record an intro and all that later, so I'm just gonna jump into the first question. So the first question I want to ask you about is, are you familiar with lucid dreaming?
Yes, the concept. Back in high school, I was really into trying to experiment with it. Had a couple of lucid dreams. Had one pretty recently. That's the first one that I've had in a long time, and it didn't last very long. My problem with them is usually when I realize that I'm dreaming, I wake up right then.
Okay, interesting. So it's like you realize that you are dreaming. You realize that
Yes.
you're aware within the dream, and then you wake up.
Yeah.
So in a sense, it's
Not
a
right then, seconds later.
yeah. It's a very short lucid experience. But have you ever had any experiences that's lasted a little bit longer, to where you're kind of
The last one did. I was in the dream, I was driving my car down 280, and I remember I looked over at the clock, and it was just gibberish on the radio clock. And I was like, that's weird. And then I realized, like, when I turned the car, it just felt so weird and, like,
Yeah.
heavy. I don't know.
So it's like there's these checks that you do to realize that you're kind of in a dream. You know, you look at a clock and it's gibberish.
Yeah.
It's like that doesn't
That's
make
not
it,
normal.
that's not normal. But sometimes in a dream, you know, something that's gibberish may seem kind of may make sense in the dream. You know what I mean? It may make sense within like the syntax of the dream. Because I think a long time ago you were telling me about like you had a dream where you were smoking cigarettes inside, and then you had to like, every time you lit up a cigarette, you had to like go outside and put it out for some reason, and you felt like you had this need to do that. You remember that?
Vaguely.
Vaguely.
That might have probably been when I had my apartment.
Yeah, but it's like I don't know, like in a dream you have these weird things that you know that you do that seem to make sense in the dream, but like when you know in real life it would never make sense.
Yeah,
Are
the
you, yeah.
normal physical laws don't apply
Which
in
is
your dream.
it's interesting because it's like it's dream logic, you know. It's weird. A lot of video games kind of play on that too, like you know, dream logic. You do something in a game that would never make sense in real life. But are your dreams like typically very visual?
It really depends.
Yeah.
If I'm drunk, I'm not gonna remember the dream, or it's gonna be very hazy. I'm drunk when I go to sleep.
That's
If
interesting. Yeah.
I'm high, it's gonna be a little bit more vivid, but if I don't wake up at the right time, there's gonna be like no recall. That's like a big thing I've noticed, is like when you wake up during your dream, or I guess like your sleep cycle determines how much of it you can recall.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure, but I think that like I'm not exactly sure how the sleep cycle is, but it's like you enter REM, and then after REM, your brain kind of goes into deep sleep. But I'm not sure in which state is the dreaming state. I think in REM you're dreaming, and then when you're in deep sleep, you're probably still dreaming, but you probably don't, you know, when you wake up, you're not remembering it. The thing is, I think when people say they don't dream, it's that they don't remember their dream. They're always dreaming. It's just
Yeah,
they're not remembering it.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I think so. Which is so interesting to me because it's like you're living this whole other experience and you're just not remembering it. So like you say that when you drink, it's the alcohol that maybe inhibits the ability to,
To
you know,
remember it.
remember, which is interesting. Do you have any like, are there any other sensory experiences that are more, I guess, pronounced in the dream? Because you know, some dreams can be visual. Do you have, like, you know, is it very, like, auditory or tactile, sensory? Because I have had experiences like
that. The feeling is, I guess, the hardest thing to remember from a dream, always. Mm-hmm. I remember very well this one dream that I had when I was very young, where I was walking down the street holding a pail. And I remember saying to myself, I know I'm not dreaming right now because I can feel the weight of this pail in my hand in the dream.
Right. It just, it feels, something like that feels so real.
Like, how could it not be?
Yeah. And you've also talked about, like you said earlier, like getting drunk or high in a dream, you actually feel like you're getting high, and sometimes you may even wake up feeling a little high. Yeah. I know that, like,
it won't last very long.
Yeah, yeah.
After waking up, but like, I've only a couple of times in my life done cocaine, like maybe three. Didn't really care for it, but can definitely recognize like the feeling of it.
Uh huh.
And I've had infinitely more dreams where I've done cocaine than I've had actual cocaine experiences. And almost every time when I wake up, usually it's like right after snorting it, and I wake up and my heart will be pounding and I'll be a little jittery for a second or two.
That's so weird, because it's like, you know, you're not actually doing anything that should cause your brain to act like that. So in a sense, it's almost kind of like you're in a placebo effect. You think that you're doing something, taking something, and it's causing your body to react in the way that it would if you're actually taking something. So in a way, it's a placebo effect. You're tricking yourself. You're tricking yourself into thinking that your body has taken something, but really you're not. So that's interesting. You know, how that relates to placebo effect. Do you often have like a ritual that you do before you go to sleep, or is there anything?
For the longest time, my sleep ritual was just to put on always Explosions in the Sky, but some form of like instrumental, chill, post-rock, very low in the background. And I did that for the longest time, but lately, it's just been, the biggest thing has been making sure I put my phone in the exact opposite corner of my room. That's the biggest
why do you do
it's the biggest distractor of trying to go to sleep. Read a lot about like actually using any form of like LED light emitting device within an hour of sleep is supposed to mess with your sleep cycles.
I think it does mess with your circadian rhythm. That's an example of technology affecting the way we sleep and essentially how we function, messing with the circadian rhythm. You know, it's interesting that you say that, you know, just putting your phone away before you go to sleep. I'm the opposite. I sleep, I put my phone, like, my charger is, like, right by my bed because I have, you know, my alarm clock is on my phone. So, you know. So maybe I should change that.
That's another reason I actually have it in the exact opposite corner of the room, because my phone is my alarm clock.
Yeah.
So you can hear it across the room, but that forces me to get up and turn it off, which then doesn't allow me to just lay there and go back to sleep.
Yeah. I mean, no, but, like, you're totally correct, though. These, you know, LED lights do mess with circadian rhythm. I think that, like, I was reading this one article that said, like, the blue wavelength that is emitted from, you know, like, a lot of LED screens, computer screens, will keep you awake longer.
Well, last night, for example, I watched a movie before I went to bed, and I tried to get to bed immediately after watching the movie. And I have not had a harder time getting to sleep in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm normally like that too. Like, before I go to bed, I'm normally watching something, listening to something helps, but, like, you know, watching a movie or something, and then, like, just crash. That could definitely put a strain on how you sleep. I mean, like, it isn't like this is really anything new, technology disrupting the way that we sleep. Like, just think of, like, when streetlights were first invented, you know? That totally disrupted the circadian rhythm. Because I think, like, before, people were getting, like, 4 hours of sleep and then getting up and then getting another 4 hours of sleep. So we would essentially sleep, like, 2 times a day, and that was considered normal. With streetlights, you have this advent of, like, you know, suddenly you have people, you know, being up and around and about in the night. You have, like, the creation of the nightlife. So it's like technology influenced the way that we function by creating nightlife. And now you have just what's considered normal is just straight, you know, getting 8 hours of sleep at night. I don't know, like that, if that's like considered normal now, because I don't, like, I don't get 8 hours of sleep at night personally.
Yeah, lucky if I get six.
Exactly. Like, you know, a lot of people don't, so we may be changing now, but that's still kind of considered the norm for how much sleep you're supposed to get, when in reality it's probably a lot more normal or a lot more human to sleep twice a day. And even though you know, people don't get to do that, but there has been a history of people doing that. Do you think that I don't know, yeah, what are some other examples of technology disrupting circadian rhythm? I mean, the big thing that I could think of is, like, phones and...
Yeah, definitely phones, like, little noises like that, computers. Technology can also help with it, though. Like, I mean, something as simple as a box fan. It's a classic white noise machine to go to sleep with.
Ooh, that's interesting. White noise. Do you tend to sleep with white noise? 'Cause
a fan.
A fan.
Not like a noisemaker or anything.
Why do you think that that helps? I'm sure there's a scientific reason for it.
I think it's because it gives you just one sound to focus on and to not really even focus on. It kind of distracts your brain just enough. And when you lay there in, like, total, complete silence, sometimes your brain will start filling in the silence with whatever thoughts you have backed up in your head, which sometimes can be a good thing, but then sometimes that can keep you up all night.
Especially, yeah, like if you're dealing with any type of anxiety or whatever.
Yeah, like the night before a major test, or night before you trying to go to sleep on Christmas Eve when you're a kid.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you ever experience, like, waking up in the middle of the night? Like, I mean, like, frequently? Like, does that tend to happen often?
Yeah, at least once or twice a week, probably.
That tends to happen to me, like, recently it's been happening a lot. Like, I'll never just, like, sleep straight through. Like, I'll always, like, get up at some weird hour very, very early in the morning. It's like, for some reason, I can't, like, just sleep. It's just, you know, I'll sleep for, like, a few hours, and I'll just, like, I'll wake up, and then I'll get back to sleep. I don't know why that is.
I mean, one thing I read on that subject said, like, even if you don't think you have to pee, to try to pee, because that's usually what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I could imagine, you know, your body is, like...
We're not 4 years old anymore. Our bodies don't want us to wet the bed.
Yeah, yeah. But what's interesting is, like, when I do wake up, I'll have this, like, sometimes, not all the time, but, like, sometimes I'll have this, like, aha moment. Like, I'll be, like, suddenly, like, a problem or something in my life was, like, you know, solved, or I'll think of, like, a new way to approach a problem. So, like, have you ever had this, like, aha moment, whether in a dream or upon just, like, waking up?
Not recently, but I've definitely, like, had those, been, like, working on, like, a really hard, complex homework problem.
Yeah.
Like, not being able to, like, figure out what I did wrong. And then, like, waking up and being like, oh, maybe I should try it this way.
Yeah.
Like, going and looking at it just from a different angle.
Yeah, it's like your brain just kind of needs time to defrag. Like when you're like, that's kind of what I think. I guess sleeping or dreaming is. It's like your brain's just trying to sort through all this, you know, really chaotic stuff that happens in life, and it's just kind of trying to put it in place.
It's kind of like with like pulling an all-nighter to study for a test. You should do that, like, I guess the day before you normally would, and then just sleep the night before the test, because, you know, when you sleep, it's a little easier to recall the next day everything mm-hmm. that you learned that day. When you just, like, cram it all.
Yeah. I mean, I can relate. I've, you know, done all-nighters in the past before several times. I'm 24 right now, and there's no way that I can do it again. Like, I used to be able to do it. Like, you know.
3 days without sleep. No problem as a kid.
Yeah, it's just like, I was like 19, 20, you know, pull an all-nighter, be fine. Now, 24 is like, there's absolutely no way that can happen. I cannot pull an all-nighter.
You need a case of Red Bull and a pot of coffee.
That's the thing. It's like, yeah, caffeine's great, but like too much caffeine, I can't drink too much caffeine. Which I think, you know, again, yeah, there's an example of how technology disrupts circadian rhythm, you know, caffeine, coffee. Now you can go to like the gas station or whatever and buy like some like super espresso stuff that has like, you know, so much caffeine in it and just be wired all day. So, you know, that's the alert mindset, I guess.
Yeah. But then like it gets to a point like if you stay up too long and you're still like chugging the caffeine, I always get this like feeling where it's like my body still kind of has energy, but my brain is just like, no.
It's like,
I need to go to sleep.
It's like you're a wet rag kind of like being propped up by like a stick or whatever. It's like you still have something that's propping you up, but it's like you're just completely void of all energy, of all, it's like you know you need to get to sleep. It's like something else is like something synthetic is running you. And that could be very that could be very dangerous. That could be very detrimental to health, both physical and mental, I think. I think, you know, sleep is definitely a very vital part of existence, and we need it. It's like, why do you think that it's so important? Why do you think that it's so important to just get enough sleep?
It gives you that time to, like, it's like plugging yourself in.
Exactly.
The battery metaphor has been used a lot throughout, I guess, since the existence of batteries for sleep.
Mm-hmm. And plugging yourself into something. Yeah, which is really cool. Really cool.
You need to recharge and refresh. You know, science shows that, you know, you heal better when you're asleep.
I've heard before, this is pretty interesting, that, like, as, like, a collective human race or whatever, half of the people are experiencing some sort of like sleep state. So it's like half of the people on the planet are dreaming, experiencing a very, you know, wild psychedelic state. That's like, that's half of, you know, people right now, which I always thought was pretty interesting.
That does kind of make sense though. I mean, half the world, it has nighttime right now.
Mm-hmm. So people are asleep, you know, and it's just so interesting that, like, we tend to forget when you ask, like, or when people ask questions like, what does it mean to be human? We tend to forget that we have a whole other side to, you know, do that. It's like we're asleep and dreaming for a large portion of our time here. And I just don't think that there hasn't been enough analysis done on, you know, how we dream, why we dream. I don't really believe in, like, what's your thought on, like, dream interpretation? Because I don't really believe that.
I feel like most of your dreams are reflections off of what's going on
exactly.
in your life. Because, when I worked at Mellow Mushroom, and during the 6 months that I worked, like, 70-hour weeks, mm-hmm. 50 to 60-hour weeks, I never worked 70. I would almost exclusively dream about work. and I there would be very incredibly vivid dreams, and some of them it would suck because it would be like I would dream an entire shift, and it'd just be like a normal shift, and then I'd wake up and I'd be like, well, that's a rip off. I got my escape from work only to go back to work. I remember very vividly this one dream I had where I was the only person in the kitchen, and the tickets on the ticket machine just started printing off, and that just wouldn't stop. Just one after another, and I was just there by myself trying to make all these pizzas. There was nobody in the store except like servers or anything, so I don't know why there were so many pizzas.
So yeah, I mean, like, dream interpretation is, to an extent, pointless. The only outside reference that you have is your personal experiences, your personal subjective experiences, and, you know, it's kind of hard to take that and analyze something as dreams from, when you're talking about, like, the interpretation of what's going on in a dream, kind of hard to, you know, analyze that, but, you know, there are certainly other ways. I think that it's just, you know, dreams are just another experience, just like life. It has the potential to be just as random, just as weird. So let's see. Any other supplements that you may like take that could help with dreaming, or, you know,
some of the bedtime teas definitely increase the vividness of the dreams. But if you, again, like, I guess, wake up in the wrong part of the cycle, you just feel really, like, groggy and almost like you didn't get sleep. And that's been my experience with any sort of sleep supplement. You know, I used to take melatonin.
Yeah.
And you take it a couple of weeks on and a couple of weeks off and, like, do that. And it'd do the same thing. Now, usually what I just do is just drink a glass of milk right before bed.
Does that tend to help?
Glass of milk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like a small one. Not enough to, you know, make you wake up in the middle of the night to have to go pee or anything.
Right.
But at least I've been told that milk has melatonin in it. And like a smaller dose than you get in the little pills they sell at the pharmacy.
I don't really like buy into a lot of supplement type stuff. I did try valerian root once, and it didn't really help me with anything.
Yeah.
I made it into a tea, and the dude, like, where I bought it from, the dude was like, this, you know, this will help you with, the term he used was visionary work, which is an interesting term, but he was talking about, like, you know, it's supposed to give you really, really visual dreams. And I tried it, and it didn't really do much of anything.
I had the same experience with
valerian
root.
Yeah. Melatonin, however, I used to take that sometimes after, like, working, like, all day. I would just come home and still kind of feeling a little wired. I would take melatonin, and then it would, you know, make me crash. But I don't do it anymore. I think that, like, I'm not even sure, like, because you can get melatonin over the counter, and it's, like, comes in individual, like, I think, 5 milligram pills or whatever. I'm not exactly sure how much that is when you're comparing to how much your brain produces. So I don't know if that's a little or a lot.
I do know it does occur naturally in the body.
Absolutely, yeah.
But don't know how much.
So it's like, if there's a way that your brain can, you know.
But actually, the last time my brother was visiting, he was saying that, like, if you smoke weed, you shouldn't take melatonin, because when you smoke weed, the cannabinoids also make your brain produce more melatonin. And
that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that could be why, you know, part of the stereotype is, you know, stone guy just passed out on the couch.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think that there are a lot of things going on there, like when you do smoke weed. Your body's doing a lot of different things, and that could
account for why you get tired. Also, I guess, you know, certain strains, too. But the, I guess, you know, there is that crash point. And then, you know, with another drug, too, caffeine, you have that crash. I don't, you know, caffeine probably doesn't, certainly not help facilitate the creation of melatonin. Absolutely no. not. But there is that crash. Yeah, same thing with sugar. That's why I try to stay away from things with, you know, a lot of sugar in it. But, let's see here. What else? Okay, so, why, so if it's so personal, a lot of these dreams, and they're really, you know, dream interpretation to an extent is kind of pointless, to an extent, you know, from a subjective point of view, it could be better, but, like, why share our dreams? Like, what is the, what's the point? And why do you think that there's some sort of aversion to sharing dreams publicly? Because I could think of some reasons.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes your dreams can be, like, very, like, super interpersonal.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, or, you know, like love dreams, you know, dreams, sex dreams.
Sex dreams.
Or dreams about, like, current problems you're dealing with that you don't really feel like talking to somebody about.
Mm-hmm. I think it takes a degree of courage to kind of come and break that barrier down when you, like, talk about it publicly. Because, you know, I don't think that... Or it's like some of these things that you may feel an aversion to talk about may kind of feel like... May kind of be personal or maybe, like, social taboos. It's like, you know, you can't talk about sex. You can't talk about... you know, other things, maybe like a violent dream or whatever. I've never really had a whole lot of violent dreams. Maybe
yeah,
like a
I've
few times.
I've never had dreams where like I've been the one doing the violence.
No.
But I've had some violent dreams.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had like dreams where there's violence in them. I can't recall that I've ever been the one doing the violence. But, you know, I don't know. I think that when you talk about dreams, people tend to... There's always going to be somebody that's going to have, like, a similar experience. What I'm trying to say is, like, I don't think we're too different, really. I don't think that we're all too different. I mean, our dreams may be different, but I think that there's always some sort of root similarity that can be found there.
Yeah, well, it's like, it's there are so many possibilities of what can happen while you're dreaming that it's interesting to talk to somebody, you know, about them, and... see, like, if they've had similar experiences or mm-hmm. see, like, just how different their experience with the dream has been.
Exactly, because, like, yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, sharing dreams can be very, very good. I think, you know, a lot of older cultures, like Aborigines, they do that. They will come together in a big part of, like, their, I think, a big part of their... culture is just to like get together and just like share their dreams, like talk, you know, with each other and just share. Here now, you know, modern society, that's kind of like, you know, not supposed to talk about it. It's considered, you know, taboo to kind of express some of these things that may be a little, you know, weird or sexual or violent. I don't know. It's just interesting to point out, like, you know, there's the that collective Dream Journal Facebook group.
Right.
Which is pretty interesting. But at the same time, you have a lot of, like, there's some privacy concerns
yeah,
there.
There's
on
a lot of self-censorship.
Yeah, there's a lot of self... There can be self-censorship. People feel the need to censor themselves. But it's also because it is a group on Facebook. And there's a lot of, you know, that kind of stuff on Facebook. Because, like, in a way, when you're posting something on Facebook, I think that... the way you behave or, you know, your psychology tends to kind of, you know, act differently in a way. Also, there's a lot of privacy concerns because, like, you're posting that on Facebook.
Right.
That's going somewhere on a Facebook server. And, you know, I didn't realize that until recently how that could be. People don't want to give their personal dreams to, like, you know, a corporation.
NSA.
Or to the NSA. It's like, that's weird. I think something like that, an experiment like a collective dream journal where people just, like, come together and share their dreams will work perfectly if it's done anonymously and if it's done off of anything that has ties to a corporation. Because, you know, obviously there's privacy concerns there, and people, I think it'll just work better anonymously.
Yeah. I mean, one of the main privacy concerns with me is, like, I guess the reason I've never, like, posted about, like, any, I guess, drug-related dream in that, that group is because my parents can see what comes up.
Exactly.
On it.
Yeah.
And so that's where some of the self-censorship comes up. Because, like, even though I'm not a cocaine user, if I had posted about those dreams, my parents probably would have freaked out if they had seen that pop up on their news feed.
Oh, absolutely.
Be no bueno.
And it's no bueno for you because you can't get to express yourself or whatever, or share your dreams. Something like that would just works better anonymously because you get to, I think you get to be, it's weird because if you're hiding behind a number, not hiding, if you're behind a number, you tend to be more honest, I think, in a way. Which is interesting. That's getting into a whole nother topic about, like, social media. It's like, I want to have another episode where I talk about social media and identity, digital identity. But it's really interesting to me. But anyways, going back to dreams, let me see that sheet. Let me see if there's anything else that I didn't go over.
Collective consciousness thing.
Yeah, okay. Collective unconscious, or whatever. That's kind of going back to Carl Jung. I don't know if you've ever listened to any of Carl Jung or read any of his stuff, because it's pretty interesting. A lot of his theories have been, like, kind of aren't really taken seriously anymore, but I just find them pretty interesting just for, like, creative purposes, I guess. Basically, he says that, like, there are these archetypes that are believed to be, like, or, like, they're, like, patterns that, I guess, that exist and, like, influence, like, human experience, and can be found, like, throughout a lot of cultures and societies and mythologies, and they take the shape of and form of, like, different things, but they can be related to, like, a similar pattern. And he also talks about, like, synchronicities, like things that, you know, like you were saying earlier, how you were driving down 280 in your dream and you looked at the clock, gibberish. You said it was just gibberish, but in a way that gibberish made you realize something, made you realize that you were in a dream. So that gibberish was in a sense meaningful because that made you realize I'm in a dream. So it's like that meant something else. So that's an example of, like, synchronicity. Another example is, like, when you look at a clock and it's like 11:11, that's like, well, that's weird. You know, 11:11 is weird because it means something. You know, it's just an arrangement of numbers in a certain way that might seem weird. But really it's just a random occurrence. He's talking about, like, there's this propensity to see meaning in random occurrences, and that says something about us as human, which I thought pretty interesting. And a lot of that can be brought up in dreams. I don't know. What do you think about that? Because
A big thing that I've been thinking about, like, this summer, and mostly just because I've been studying computer science lately in school, is random numbers. And just, like, just how random can you get? Is there really a true random?
That's something that I've thought about, you know, because I have on my phone, I have a random number generator. And, yeah, like, how random is random? It's like, because it can all be boiled down to, you know, generating it off of a computer, you're boiling it down to essentially just ones and zeros. It's a mechanical process. It's a determined process.
I know, like, usually with computers, what they'll do is, like, based off, like, there's some crazy complex formula that involves, like, you know, your system time, what exactly, which thread it's running through, and all sorts of things like that to generate the random number. Mm-hmm. And if you do a bunch of trials with the random numbers, let's say it's, like, a random number between 0 and 1, do like 10,000 trials and average it, it's almost always going to be, you know, a 0.5 average, or like floating between a 0.49 blah 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 and a 0.51.
So yeah, that,
so they like, you know, we're getting good at creating things that seem to be totally random,
but in reality they aren't. It's just they're totally random because we just can't see the bigger, you know, it's just too much information to kind of process. So to us it seems random, but do you think that there is a determined process? It's like, you know what I mean? It's like
I can try to pull a number, random number out of my head right now. I'm going to say like 364.
Mm-hmm.
But then like now I'm looking at that 364, that's like almost 365, how many days there are in a year.
Yeah.
Maybe somewhere in my head that's what I was thinking when I thought of that. And then I've noticed
there's something going on in there. You know?
If, you know, when you do that thing, it's like pick a number between 1 and 10, and one person's got the number in their head.
Yeah.
For some reason, I almost always pick 7 if I'm the person, like, calling, like, that has the number.
Yeah.
That the people are trying to guess.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's weird. People think that, I mean, isn't that what, like, you know, so you're a computer science major. Isn't that what cryptography is based off of? Like, randomness, like encrypting data in like a seemingly random pattern to, you know, for safety concerns. Like, isn't that what cryptography is all about?
I quite haven't gotten into the encryption. Okay. That's actually this fall. It's actually going to be a fun and interesting.
Yeah, that's what really interests me.
Also,
I don't
3D
know.
Printing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's going to be
that is
interesting.
Cool.
I don't know if we actually get to 3D print or if it's just a theory class.
You do it. At UAB?
At UAB.
I think UAB has 3D printers.
Yeah, I know the physics department had one, so I would assume that the computer science department would have one.
Yeah, no.
Or
if
not the same one, because they're
like,
the same building.
3D printing definitely is becoming way more common now. Like, you know, yeah. You definitely could do it.
And it's relatively more affordable now.
Absolutely, yeah.
Definitely say relatively, because it's still going to cost you $1,000 to get a 3D printer that can print something that's like, print like a 6-inch by 6-inch cube.
Now they're working on ways. Start saving, like, you know, plastic bottles. Now they're working on ways to, like, take that plastic, like a Coke bottle or whatever, and use that as material.
Yes, print filling it.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, just save a lot of that.
I also remember reading, like, at when 3D printers technology first started coming out and got pretty big. I guess they've been out for a couple years. Was a bioprinting.
Oh yeah, like a.
Printing
meat, or whatever. I heard
about
that.
Would that be vegan meat?
Yeah, I guess so. Because you're not harming any living thing. And I think that's what veganism kind of stands for, is not harming any living thing. So I suppose, I mean, I'm not a vegan, but I would imagine that a vegan wouldn't have a problem with it, unless they just get weirded out by
the
other implications. Yeah. I would try it. I've heard people that have tried it say that it just, because it's, you know, you're printing meat, but you're not necessarily printing
printing an animal that ate grass for,
right,
you know,
which
however many years.
There's no fat cells.
Had a certain diet, yeah.
And fat cells are what give meat, you know, the flavor or whatever. So it's often described as being, like, very dry. I don't know, I would try it once, just for
the
shits.
Yeah.
I'd try it. But yeah, I guess going back to, you know, randomness and cryptography. Cryptography is interesting now because it's kind of broken in a way. What with NSA, you know, everybody, I mean, like with the recent revelation that NSA was listening to, like, you know, your phone calls and your emails and spying on you, and, you know, how you know, and they, you know, NSA is like employs a large number of, like, who they employ are like mathematicians or people who, like, you know, work in cryptography. So in a way, you know, people have this, I guess, apprehension to trust something that might be considered secure nowadays. What's the, like, the standard protocol for cryptography now? Isn't it called, like, SSL or something? It's like, whenever you see, like, on a website, there's that little, like,
lock or whatever.
It's like lock, like up in the browser.
That's like icon. Shows that like it follows a certain like. I could be completely wrong about this, but I think like it's like it shows that it follows a certain like protocol of like.
Usually, like on a website, yeah. That you buy something. On,
yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That you put your credit card.
It's like so nobody can get your information. But like recently, I was reading that like a bunch of hackers in Russia stole like 1.2 billion passwords, usernames, and passwords of like from various sites. So it's like how
Was that like with the Heartbleed thing?
Well, there was the Heartbleed, but this was something like completely different. Like Russian hackers stole like that could have been because of the Heartbleed, but. From what I understand, it's like Heartbleed happened, and then like a couple months later, Russian hackers, like this was pretty recently, Russian hackers stole all these passwords and are like selling them, hawking them off on the black market. The government won't come out and say that the sites that have been affected. For some reason, they're not releasing that information, but they've released the information that, yeah, your information might have been compromised. You know, cryptography now might be broken. We might need to see a new revamp in the secure systems that are being implemented now.
That might not happen until quantum computing
exactly.
becomes a bigger thing.
I was fixing to bring that up. It's like, you know, I don't know about quantum computing and how it can like process certain things faster than others. I really don't know about that. But what I think it can do is it can help the randomness, because like, you know, you're getting down to that quantum level, you're generating something that's random. That can be useful, I think, for cryptography, because I think I could imagine it would be very hard to replicate that randomness, I think, or to break that. You know, like I said, I don't know too much about it, but yeah, pretty interesting. I think that I was reading about how they were like generating random numbers by basically pointing like light at a cell phone lens or whatever, and based on how the light would hit the lens, because it would hit it in a very different way every time, and based on all the factors involved by the light hitting the lens would generate a random number. So yeah, how does okay, so we got from dreams to cryptography. How like, there's got to be a binding point there. How does that relate?
I don't know. Dreams can be pretty cryptic.
They can. There's this code, essentially, that's going on
in there. The randomness.
Yeah. The randomness. Your brain's essentially like...
I guess your dreams are like your brain's screensaver.
Yeah. I guess, your brain is defragging, getting rid of a lot of, here's some interesting stuff. Have you ever, like, suffered from, sleep paralysis? Have you ever had sleep paralysis before?
I don't think so, but I've had dreams where I've had sleep paralysis, so maybe it actually was, but it's like I woke up like somebody's...
Mm-hmm.
Or in the dream, I had woken up from a dream.
From what I understand, it's a rather common occurrence. So it's like if it does happen, it's not anything to be too total. I mean, it's rather terrifying when it does happen, but it's not too. It's like you're not, you know, in danger of anything really. It's a rather common experience throughout, you know, human history, which is interesting because like it's just something that our body does. I think it's like when you wake up, kind of in that in between point. And your body just kind of tenses up with fear because you don't really know what's going on. It's your whatever.
It's like with those, like, the cocaine dreams that I was talking about earlier. Like, my theory behind that is kind of like, for those, like, 5 or 6 seconds that you can kind of still feel that when you wake up and you, like, jerk out of bed, you're kind of still winding out of that dream.
Right. Yeah. So it's your, yeah. I get what you're saying, which is interesting. I'm going to check the time here and make sure everything's okay. Okay, so I think I want to go on the, get on talking about more about how technology affects dreams. And you were saying that you
put your phone on the other side of the room when you go to sleep, which is, you know, awesome, you know, good for you, because LEDs can cause, you know, can disrupt circadian rhythm. Do you think that we really need to see kind of like, or change the way and how we interact with our technology in us, you know, in order to get, you know, better rest, less anxiety?
It would probably be helpful.
Right. What are some steps that we can do to do that, you know? I mean, they may be, mm-hmm. may be pretty easy, you know.
Some of them, they're easy to say, but I guess not easy to implement.
Yeah, what
are they? Just not to be so reliant
on
our phones.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm very guilty of, like, if I get down to the end of Emmerich Parkway and I realize that I've forgotten my phone, I'm going to turn around and get it. Now, if I go any bit further past that when I'm headed downtown, I'm going to be late for whatever I was doing, so I just mm-hmm. can't. But then I'm, like, freaking out because I don't have my phone, which is, like, I guess the source of music, communication, you know, reminders. It distracts us from getting lost in our own thought.
Exactly, it does. Because we're so, we're so, like, being so connected, which can be a good thing, but can also be a very bad. Being so connected.
Well, so it's like, you know, it's not always, like, social media or something you're doing on your phone. You can, you know, look up some interesting articles, yeah, go on Reddit or, you know, whatever.
There's
like, read, you know, good informative stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great
resource. What I think sucks about it is there are a lot of things that suck about it. It's just the corporatization of it. It's like, you know, how everything's just kind of if I want to engage with technology, I would feel a little bit more comfortable if it's like, you know, if my privacy wasn't being compromised, if everything wasn't necessarily just in the hands of big telecommunication companies, internet service providers, all that stuff, you know.
It's like the default should be none of your information is shared, and then you choose what you want to share. But now the default is all of your information is shared, and you have to go and tell it not to share something. Like, that's how it is with, like, Facebook.
Yeah.
I remember, I'm going to butcher the quote, but, like, the sum of it, the Mark Zuckerberg or whatever, he's saying, you know, I don't understand why anybody would want to limit anything on Facebook. Like, you should want everything to be public. It's
no.
social media.
No.
But no. I only want the people that I'm friends with to see the things that I post for my friends to see.
Absolutely. People think that, like, I read an article that's saying that, like, Facebook is going to be pretty much abandoned by the end of the century. That's, like, it's going to be, nobody's really going to use, because there's going to be a lot of alternative things, alternative social media. People are going to get fed up with the shit that Facebook is doing, all this, like, you know, privacy concerns. Recently with the recent study that they did you hear about that? How they were, like, they manipulated, it was like they actually went in and manipulated certain posts that you could see based on, like, for some, they took a pool of people and they said, okay, we're only going to show them, like, negative posts. And then they took another pool of people and it's like, we're going to show them positive posts. And they analyzed how the posts of the users were affected. And they said that, like, people who saw negative images got affected negatively or whatever, and people who saw, like, positive posts or whatever got affected, like, were posting more positive things. So it was a social experiment that they were doing, and that can obviously be, and I might have gotten some part of that wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's what they were doing. It's a social experiment that they did. So part of me is like, well, wait a minute, that's awful, that's horrible. Why are they doing that? But part of me is like, well, you signed up for Facebook in the first place. You're participating in a social experiment when you're signing up. So it's like, who's, ultimately, I think Facebook should be held accountable for what they did, because that's pretty fucked up, what they're doing.
And they should at least let you know. Like, but I guess that, who knows, they might have in the privacy policy somewhere.
Probably. I think that's how they're getting away with it.
Saw that episode of South Park. why can't you read?
I think
you didn't read the 265 pages of the iTunes agreement.
Oh man, it's so I'm gonna use the word, it's so Orwellian now. I've considered, just like after reading that, just like reading more about, you know, social media policy, considering, you know, axing Facebook, just because, you know, it's, I don't know.
See, I made it like 3 days the last time that I tried to deactivate my Facebook, and the problem I found is that almost every freaking thing that you are signed up for, app-wise, internet-wise, like so many games, Spotify, Strava, the thing I use to track my cycling rides, all want to link to your Facebook, and you Absolutely. Have to log in with Facebook.
Mm-hmm. There's a there are ways around that I found. There's also, you know, just trying to this can be like a creative act in itself, trying to get off the grid. There's plenty of open source alternatives to that kind of stuff. Plenty of open source alternative social media. Like you said, Reddit earlier. Reddit is I like Reddit. Reddit is, I have a Reddit account. It's you know, I don't post any personal information on it.
Yeah, it's pretty good about
I like
anonymity.
Uh-huh. Twitter is a little different. I have a Twitter. I don't mind having a Twitter. The thing I like about Twitter is because it limits the amount of posts or the amount of like characters that you could like tweet. So in a way, I kind of like that because it's like people aren't willing to kind of go through this whole, you know, constructing any type of like identity online. But it's rather like I see a lot of people using it just to like share information, share articles. You know, that's what I use it for. It's just like, there's anything that's interesting, like an article or something that I read that's interesting, yeah, or anything that I want to share, just share it, you know?
Yeah.
So in a way, you're just becoming a conduit for information, which I like. That's cool. Twitter, I think, has a better privacy policy. They may have changed some stuff, I don't know. Probably a lot better than Facebook.
One thing, and I read this, like, in freshman year of college, if you have your Twitter account set to public, the Library of Congress has a copy of every tweet that you've ever made.
Okay, that's interesting. I mean, I don't... That's weird, and I don't use it that much. I hardly ever use it at all. That's the thing, just, like, trying to look into alternative methods of getting off the grid. Also, you know, with phones, telecommunication, big telecommunication companies that really just try to screw you over.
Well, it's like, you know, now, like, if I took a picture of you right now, in the data file of that picture is going to be the exact location of where we are right now when
yeah.
I take this picture.
There's a way on your phone where you can turn that off, but, you know, that's GPS. Everybody uses, you know, satellites in the sky. We need to really change the way we think about technology. I think we need to just become more makers and scavengers rather than consumers. There's nothing in it for just to be a blind consumer. Nothing left anymore. I don't know. Have you ever heard of the... I'm probably getting this name wrong. It's called... it's like the Dark Sky Project or the Dark Sky Initiative. I don't think that's the initiative. But it's like this nonprofit organization is all about like trying to limit light pollution or whatever, so that we can have a better view of the night sky.
I'd need to find this and like sign this petition then. Two nights ago we had the supermoon.
Yeah.
And I tried to go outside and
light pollution
everywhere. And like the majority of it is like, yeah, there's a lot of street lights and stuff. It's not as bad as if you're downtown, but I can walk the golf course at night on a moonless night and see perfectly well, not because my eyes adjust, but because everybody along the golf course has their whole backyard illuminated in the middle of the night. Why? Who are you illuminating that for at 2 in the freaking morning?
It's, part of it, I think, comes from, how should I put this? It's like they want to, they may feel unsafe.
Yeah,
so they may feel like
some of
they
it
need
is
to,
paranoia.
Yeah, they need to illuminate and you know, scare away any... I mean, like...
This is a pretty safe area.
Relatively safe, yeah. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I like the way that this nonprofit organization, I like their goal, because it's a rather noble goal. I think they probably need to, like, ramp up their arguments, because they're still kind of coming from that point where, you know, it's like an argument from, like, aesthetics. They think that, like, the night sky is good, because, you know, it's beautiful. I think that's true, and, you know, I agree with that, but it's still just coming from a point where, you know, essentially what they're saying is, like, I think it's good because it's you know, it's beautiful. But I think there's also more logical concerns there. There's, you know, how detached we're becoming from, you know, or how we're interacting with technology can really affect us in a negative way, I think.
I recently listened to Neil deGrasse Tyson's book, Death by a Black Hole, on audiobook, and there's actually a whole chapter on light pollution, and forgot what city he was talking about, but it's near some major observatory, and he's talking about, like, the city has very strict light ordinances. All of the street lamps have to be the downward facing kind with a closed off, like, top, so that light doesn't shine off upwards. Now, it's going to reflect upwards. You can't really prevent that.
Yeah.
But it's all directed downwards.
Which is where it needs to be. That's where it needs to be. Yeah. That's the kind of stuff they're fighting for. Which I thought was pretty interesting. I want to maybe try to get them, like, get in contact with them and try to record an episode with them. I think they're, like, their nearest chapter is in Atlanta or whatever. But let's see.
Yeah, speaking of Atlanta, how that, I wish I could have helped y'all out with that.
Oh, actually, that didn't happen. What he's talking about is, like, we were planning on going to Atlanta to go work with some computers and build some computers and donate them to a summer camp in need that needed some computers. It didn't happen, but it may happen in the future. The reason why it didn't happen was because the organization that I was talking to didn't have enough equipment. I thought they did, but they sent me a list of, like, some of the equipment they had, and it was, like, hardly enough. And the other organization that I was talking to, they're in, like, a beta phase now, which they're still trying to get their stuff together. So they're, like, getting in contact with, like, me in, like, you know, a couple months or whatever. So, you know, it didn't happen, but it may happen in the future. I don't know. I like how we kind of touched on, you know, light pollution and becoming, you know, more in tune with a circadian rhythm. Because, you know, technology is everywhere. And in a way, it's kind of like becoming a huge distraction. You know, I don't know if you've, like, paid any attention to VR, like, or AR, like, virtual reality or augmented reality. I don't really trust that too much. I mean, I think I've never tried it. I would like to try some virtual reality. That would be pretty cool, like, try an Oculus Rift or whatever. To an extent, that does sound kind of cool, but, like, you know, what are we doing with technology?
Yeah, I feel like something like motion sickness might be a big thing with something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard people that have tried it. They've been in it for, like, 6 hours, and they come out, and they just feel like reality just isn't real. I think it's kind of antisocial in a way. Yeah. That's what scares me.
Or, like, one of the things, like, the biggest complaint about Google Glass is that it hurts your eye.
I would never, never, ever do that. Like, that sounds awful. Augmented reality? I wouldn't. It's like, it's just asking the questions, like, what are we doing with our technology? It seems like we have this drive to look inward with technology, in a way, because, like, we're all looking at it. We're all looking at it instead of using it to look outward, you know? We're all looking at it.
Because, like, it's called virtual reality and augmented reality, and you're trying to make different realities using, to ignore the one that we're in.
Using light, using the power of, like, using the power of fire that we've cultivated ever since, you know, the beginnings of human civilization. Fire, you know, we've always had it, and now we're able to have it, hold it, to look at it, to create light, But in a way, this light is causing a type of pollution. We're not, you know, engaging with this other side, which is, like, you know, the darkness, the cold, the stuff that is so very vital and central to our this human life. I think that part of me thinks that we have this inability to kind of confront some large-scale problems, such as, like, you know, the issues with our, you know, demise, some problems that are facing species now. You know, asteroids can come and kill us all. We have this, we're not using our technology to kind of focus on these issues here, these bigger issues. Instead, we're kind of using it in a different way, which is why I think that maybe looking into alternative uses for technology might work. I don't know, though.
You know, it's slightly off subject, but getting still on, like, the science-y side, I guess, that we've been going on here for the past few minutes.
Yeah.
You've read about those holes opening up in Russia.
Yeah.
I read, you might have posted that, actually, the other day, the one
probably
about what may have caused it, and the escaping methane gas.
Yeah.
And that global warming or climate change or whatever you want to call it, is causing that, but if too much of that methane gets released, it will significantly increase the amount of global warming.
Yeah, it would, it'd be pretty bad. If all that methane gets out, that's, you know, definitely, will contribute to the greenhouse effect that's happening, and wouldn't be too good for the planet. Yeah. Would not be
too
good.
I think it said something like 9.6% of the air in that area was methane, mm-hmm. but on average, it's like 0.0009.
I was talking to somebody recently, and they were like, this kind of stuff happens all the time. It's like, you know, it's like, I'm not sure if you have, you know, permafrost. I mean, I don't know if, like,
I mean, there's sinkholes that open up and
yeah, but I'm not sure
homes occasionally, but
if it's caused by, like, the permafrost that's melting in, like, Siberia. And also, like, it's affecting the people that live there. There's, like, a group of people that live there. They're called, like, the Nenet or whatever. And they have, like, certain land bridges that they use or whatever that are, like lakes that they cross that are usually frozen at certain times. But now they're, you know, they have to wait later in the year to cross to get to where they need, which is totally disrupting their way of life. It's crazy, man. We need to... But now, like, did you hear about, like, Australia, what they're doing? They're like, I think it's like they're getting rid of a tax on carbon. So it's like, carbon taxes or whatever. So it's like that industry is... You know, it's going to be a lot easier to buy oil or coal or whatever in Australia. Which isn't good. Isn't good at all, because that's just
gonna... Isn't that right where the hole is?
Where?
In the ozone, like over above Australia?
I don't know. Maybe if that is, that's... in Miami, I think. Yeah, Miami is, like, the sea level is kind of rising in Miami right now. And people have, like, talked about, like, you know, this summer, seas kind of, like, seawater is, like, filling the storm drains or whatever. It's, like, storm drains are overflowing with seawater and shit like that. Miami might become the new Venice. I guess, I don't know.
It might do society a little bit of good.
Especially, you know, I've never been to Miami, I wouldn't.
Nor have I, but all I know about Miami is... drugs and partying. But of course, then that's just what's represented through movies and occasional crazy police reports that pop up on Facebook.
I don't know. It's trying to think, like, I'm trying to think, like, you know, I'm seeing where civilization and society is kind of going right now, and trying to, like, predict, like, what the next logical move should be. Because it's not like, you know, the job market right now, we're kind of screwed. So the way we're, you know, living life now is kind of different. You know, we older, or it's like, you know,
you're at an older age before you move out of your parents' house now, because the job market isn't really too good. You can't go and get a job at, you know, some place and expect to be there for, like, you know, your whole life. It's like, that doesn't happen anymore. Absolutely not. There's more, I think there's more availability of, like, jobs that are low paying now. But what we're beginning to see is, like, the erosion of middle paying jobs due to, I guess, automation. So it's like, what are we going to do? I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. That's trying to figure it out.
Part of why I switched to, like, computers. I mean, computers have always interested me, but to computer science, that's my major, is because, like, with automation becoming more and more of a thing,
yeah,
until they figure out a way to completely write a program that just writes programs,
yeah,
and that's all it does, and it can solve any problems, you're still going to need programmers.
Absolutely, yeah, that's pretty big now. You need programmers. Programmers are, if you know how to code and you can code well, you could probably get a job. For everybody else that, you know, can't code or doesn't know how to code or doesn't want to code, there might be a bit of an issue there. I don't know, though.
Yeah, but going back to, you know, what you're saying, like, with the longevity of jobs and stuff, like, my mom, just a couple of years ago, started working at Compass, and the way they, like, not at the actual bank, but in their corporate building, does online banking work.
Yeah.
And, like, the way they hired people on was they gave you a one-year contract. So you were guaranteed a job for a year, but you had no way to know if you were going to have a job at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And if at the end of that year you did have a job, you were hired on as, like, a full-time employee and not a contractor.
Stuff like that is kind of rather common now because, like, you'd... just the idea of, like, you know, having stable employment becoming less and less common. You're always taking, you know, job after job after job. But that's just, it's the changing market. I think that there are solutions to that, but not any that are in full effect right now. Yeah. Well, any closing things we want to talk about?
I guess not off the top of my head.
Okay.
It's about 15 degrees hotter than when we started.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's a good sign to end off of. Global warming is kind of cutting us off here. So maybe just because it's summer.
No, it's definitely the time of day. The sun is
1:43. Let's see. Nice. About an hour.